We're looking into the COVID relief bill signed into law last week and what it means in the face of climate change. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Environmental advocates have called provisions in the bill a game changer, the most significant federal climate legislation ever. That's reaction from the Clean Air Task Force policy director talking with USA Today. What do you think about Congress putting in measures to tackle climate change as part of the COVID relief bill? Is it appropriate? Do you work in the green energy sector? How do you see investments in renewable energy stimulating the economy? We're at 800-642-1234. Grant Carlisle is a senior policy advisor with the Climate and Clean Energy Program of the Natural Resources Defense Council. Grant, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
So were you surprised to find that packed inside the government funding and COVID relief bill, a bill with thousands of pages, were all of these environmental measures?
Well, it really is a symptom of trying to get things done in Congress right now, that these things ended up being wrapped up into a huge bill, which included relief for COVID-related items, the annual appropriation, so funding for the government, and then an Energy Policy Act, which sets national energy policy for the nation across all of the energy sectors, which hadn't been passed in about 13 years. So really, it's not that this was, you know, things were kind of snuck in at the last minute. It was that all of these things were developed over many, many, many months of time, and everyone was kind of looking for a vehicle to get them that would actually go to the president for his signature. And this happened to be the only train out of town. So everyone then starts throwing all of their priorities on. So it wasn't just, you know, climate items. It was many, many, many other things that ended up getting put on this as well.
Certainly
not the best way to legislate, but it's often the way that Congress works now.
Well, let's look at this laundry list of items. Digging right in, the bill will phase out hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs. Mm-hmm. What are these chemicals?
So these are, it's a very, very potent greenhouse gas that is used in a lot of household appliances, refrigerators, for instance. For many decades, and obviously when it gets leaked into the atmosphere, it is not good for the climate. So colleagues of mine had been working for quite a long time through international treaties and finally through legislation at the national level to ensure that manufacturers in the coming years could phase out these chemicals. They'll be over about the course of about 15 years that they'll phase them out of industrial production. And they made a deal with the industry. This is an incredibly bipartisan measure with a lot of Republicans in the Senate and House and Democrats all agreeing on this, industry, environmental groups all agreeing on it. It just finally took that big of a push to get it across the line. And it will save about a half a degree of warming by the end of the century.
What will it mean for consumers or the costs of people who are cooling their homes?
As far as I've seen, there will be no effect on consumer products. I mean, this was an agreement that was made over the course of many years between industry, between the environmental community, and between lawmakers to determine that there would not be a huge impact on consumers, that this would just be a good climate win and would allow for some more efficient, innovative products that did not include hydrofluorocarbons to get into people's homes over the course of about 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, so certainly
small adjustments being made.
Yeah, a long runway on that to make that adjustment. What about green energy tax credits? Congress voted to extend tax credits available for building renewable energy projects. Can you explain how these credits work?
Sure. So the main ones that are primarily utilized by the big green clean energy industries, which are solar and wind, are the investment tax credit, which is typically used by the solar industry, and the production tax credit, which is typically used by the wind energy industry. The ITC, that the investment tax credit that I mentioned, basically gives companies a credit for establishing a certain low or zero carbon source of energy development over a certain period of time gives them a certain percentage of that, of their investment back. So right now it's at 26%.
Mm-hmm.
It starts at 30% and it sunsets so-called at 10%. So in other words, it's a permanent 10% credit that can go to these companies that are developing this energy. Wind energy, the wind energy credit, the production tax credit, more works that the energy has to actually be online. It's a production tax credit, and it's kind of measured that way versus investment. So, and that is at, I believe, about 60% right now. But both of those are phasing down over time through, per an agreement in 2015, which established that schedule. And then they've gotten several, like we just saw several weeks ago, they've gotten several extensions to further the life of that. Part of that being because of COVID, as you can imagine, a lot of these installations and deployments have taken a very, very big hit this year.
Well, as you look around the world, how effective have these tax credits been in encouraging investment in renewable energy?
They have been an enormous help. I mean, there's no clearer way to deploy something like an energy technology, you know, a field of wind turbines, which might cost hundreds of millions of dollars to install and take several years. The clearest way to do that through, at least in this country, through federal policy is through a tax incentive, which allows investors and the companies actually developing these resources to recoup their investment over a certain amount of time, sometimes very quickly, depending on the structure of the credit, sometimes over the course of a number of years. There are similar structures in a lot of other countries, and what we've seen is the tax code is generally a great way to deploy things. You know, these credits could certainly be tweaked, and how we treat clean energy tax and the tax code could definitely be improved upon. But for now, they've been very useful during their lifetime.
What would this bill mean for homeowners who want to take advantage of perhaps installing solar panels?
Sure. So the rooftop solar credit, frankly, I'd have to look.
Sure.
What we're talking about when I say the investment tax credit is mostly looking at what's called utility scale solar.
Yeah.
So these are the huge fields of solar panels that are installed in many places. I've driven through rural Wisconsin and seen some. But in terms of rooftop solar, that's technically a separate credit, which I believe is phasing down on the same schedule. So, I mean, it should, in other words, it should not have a big effect on consumers who are trying to put panels on their homes. The biggest effect that we've seen in the last 10 months has been simply just restrictions due to COVID that have stopped a lot of those installations. And obviously, as trade was slowing down with other countries, a lot of companies were hurting because they couldn't get panels, which are made in other countries.
Yeah.
Although a lot of them have been stockpiling them because of the president's trade policies.
So certainly political influence is there really making an impact on the industry. As we're talking here now with Grant Carlisle, he's senior policy advisor with the Climate and Clean Energy Program of the Natural Resources Defense Council. He's explaining the environmental measures that are found inside the COVID relief bill. Taking your questions about these measures, do you work in the green energy industry? How do you see investments in renewable energy stimulating the economy? What do you want to know about climate change and what this bill does in terms of addressing it? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Rich now, joining us from Eagle this morning. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
Doing well. What would you like to add?
I was just calling because natural gas is a very common fuel used to heat a lot of people's homes here in Wisconsin. And I was curious to know if the legislation would have any impact on the use of natural gas to kind of push away from it and get more people onto electricity for heating, or what homeowners could expect to see in the way of that.
Rich, thank you for that question. What impact does this bill have on natural gas, Grant?
Sure. I don't think there'd be a lot of immediate impact. So again, what I mentioned was there was something called an Energy Policy Act, that was passed as part of this huge package. And this sets one thing that it does is set research and development at the Department of Energy for looking into various energy technologies. So looking for efficiencies in the solar industry and the wind industry to make those technologies less expensive, which is the Department of Energy has been extremely successful in doing in the past 10 years or so. Another thing that it did, though, was to pass within the Fossil Energy Office, and that's where they do, obviously, research and development on natural gas, a component of the bill which looks at improving the efficiency, or really improving, cutting down on leaks from natural gas infrastructure. So, in other words, tamping down on the emissions from natural gas, which can be really, really significant, and obviously that industry has taken off, has grown as well. Beyond that, I have not heard anything about exactly how this bill would affect natural gas going to people's homes. There's not anything in this bill that is limiting one resource. It's literally just investing dollars in how do we make these technologies cleaner and how do we make them more efficient.
We're talking with Grant Carlisle, Senior Policy Advisor for the Climate and Clean Energy Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Do you think this climate legislation will make a difference? What action on climate change do you want to see from the Biden administration in its early days? Should climate policy be tied to COVID relief? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Grant Carlisle here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're unpacking the COVID relief bill that President Trump signed last week that includes provisions to fund clean energy programs and technologies and bring more regulation to greenhouse gas emissions. The legislation offers billions of dollars in spending on solar and wind projects, as we've been talking about. What do you think about new climate policy as part of this COVID relief package? What are you watching for and wondering about in terms of carrying out climate policy inside this bill? It's 800-642-1234. Grant Carlisle is Senior Policy Advisor for the Climate and Clean Energy Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council, and he's with us for 10 more minutes. Grant, another piece of this is reauthorizing the Weatherization Assistance Program, which is designed to help low-income families improve their homes' efficiency, cut their energy bills, other related things. What can you tell us about this weatherization program?
Sure. And thank you for having me on. So the Weatherization Assistance Program is, you did a great job of defining its purpose. Basically, it's grants into different communities that help installers, energy efficient installers, landlords, homeowners, business owners to put in new technologies to cut down on energy use in HVAC systems and windows and other materials and building house materials, right? So this program is a great, great bang for your buck. If you look across every state, every county that you see this program in use, which is just about every county in the country, every time you see a $10 investment, for instance, you'll see $100 in savings for consumers, for the folks that own the buildings, that live in the buildings, that work in the buildings. So it really is a great investment on behalf of the federal government. It helps, again, obviously consumers, it helps business owners, it helps the utilities even by using less energy. So the grid is less, they're not having to build out transmission as often. So it's something that we see as a really no-brainer and generally has enjoyed bipartisan support.
So you see that the return on investment is there through this grant program and that the grant funding is getting to the people who need it?
We do, yeah. I mean, there are certainly improvements that could be made to mm-hmm. just about any program. But over the lifetime of weatherization assistance, which has existed for, to my knowledge, for at least a decade, it's been incredibly successful for consumers across the country.
Let's take a look further here on research and development, clean energy research and development, billions of dollars designated for this type of R&D. What can you tell us here?
Sure. So every so often, Congress will pass, again, what I mentioned earlier, which is the Energy Policy Act. One of the things that this does, and the main focus of this Energy Policy Act, was to set authorization levels for investments in research and development for various technologies. So the Department of Energy, all of its technological offices are broken up in exactly how you'd probably assume. There's fossil energy, which contains, you know, investments in efficiencies in coal and natural gas. There's a nuclear office, and then there's solar and wind offices that are under a clean energy office, and obviously energy efficiency as well. Basically, what this does is this bill, it went in, the last time a bill like this was passed was 13 years ago, and the energy sector has gone through a really rapid transformation, and especially in terms of renewables being deployed and becoming, you know, a slowly, well, at this point, pretty rapidly growing portion of our energy mix nationally, and I'm sure on the state level in Wisconsin as well. As you've seen, you know, coal go offline, natural gas has increased as well, and energy efficiency technology has been deployed in a lot of areas as well. So basically, it was adjusting how we're putting federal research and development dollars into these different technologies. We were especially focused on the renewable energy and the energy efficiency technologies to ensure that we're deploying these, you know, more efficient technologies in the coming decades to reduce emissions eventually to zero from the energy sector.
Mm-hmm.
And then also putting dollars into the transportation sector, which is now the largest single portion of emissions in the country. Obviously, that's not just the Department of Energy that's going to do that. That's a lot of other agencies. And then we have to deploy zero and low emission vehicles as well. One other item I did want to point out is that one thing this bill would do that we were really heavily involved in and are big fans of is bring a lot of the energy storage research and development from across different programs, the Department of Energy, really into a central place and establish it as one of the huge priorities for the department. And energy storage is exactly like it sounds. It's when the wind isn't blowing. It's when the sun isn't shining. These are batteries, typically, where you're able to take a lot of the energy that was previously put into the grid from when the sun was shining, when the wind was blowing, and storing that for when we actually need it.
So you make a nice, real consistency of energy delivery.
Exactly. So every time you go to the light switch, it turns on. And we've seen this deployed really heavily with solar, and we're trying to deploy it with other technologies as well.
We're talking with Grant Carlisle, Senior Policy Advisor with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He works in the Climate and Clean Energy Program. We're looking at the COVID relief bill and the government spending bill and the environmental measures within it. Taking your questions about the policy, 800-642-1234. Grant, pipeline safety is a huge issue here in the Midwest, and this legislation reauthorizes a pipeline safety bill through a section that was really people on board from the oil and gas industry, on board from the environmental lobby. What can you tell us about funding for pipeline safety and for ensuring that we can try to prevent these leaky pipelines?
Right. So this has been a long term. I will say I'm not an expert in pipeline safety, but this has been a long time priority of a lot of folks on Capitol Hill to ensure that you're looking at the infrastructure that can be safe, especially as a lot of crude oil is moving out of the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say the Midwest, the plains. So North Dakota, especially, we're all familiar with the Bakken, for instance, or Texas or other regions. And there have been obviously spills into rivers and different communities. So it's ensuring that this infrastructure is not breaking down as these raw materials are moving. Obviously, we think that we should be using less and less of a material that's going to poison a community if it gets out of the infrastructure. But I think in the near term, the focus of that legislation is to ensure that those accidents are not going to happen, especially as this infrastructure is built out really rapidly in certain parts of the country. Again, what I was mentioning earlier on natural gas is I know that one component of the fossil energy bill was to ensure that there are far less emissions really put research and development dollars into looking that there are far less emissions leaks from natural gas infrastructure in particular, because what typically the emissions that would come out of that, one of the major components of that would be methane,
yeah.
which of course is a huge greenhouse gas, up to a third more potent than carbon.
Well, let's bring in Taylor now in Madison with a question. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, thanks for having me. So my question is,
Taylor, are you still there? Oh, I think we lost her. Taylor wants to know how she can keep up with following the money, following the policy initiatives, and making sure that they're followed through on. Oh, Grant, are you there? It sounds like we have both lost. Grant, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Yes, now we can hear you. So Taylor and Madison called, and Taylor wants to know, how can she keep following the money trail here, making sure that the funding that is in place through this legislation is carried out and is put into action in how it was intended to be?
Sure. So every dollar the federal government spends that is non-defense, I don't want to speak too generally, but you can track that through various federal agencies to see exactly where it goes. The Department of Energy, for instance, all of these dollars, they have to, when a bill like this is passed, either appropriations, which is literally kind of cashing a check, right, and sending the money to various parts of the federal government, or the authorization legislation, the Energy Policy Act that I was mentioning, which kind of sets it kind of is the check. It's the paper check. The appropriations is kind of the signature, if that metaphor works. All of these agencies and Congress report on exactly what is in the bill, outline how much is going to go into every little part of it, and then the agencies themselves have to talk about exactly what they're doing with those dollars year in and year out, and they have to report to the appropriations committees and exactly what they did every year to get more funding.
Grant, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Grant Carlisle is Senior Policy Advisor for the Climate and Clean Energy Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.